From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live. I'm Car with my BFF Keon. What you think of that intro?
Which one?
All of them.
I feel like there were like five separate courses to this meal of an intro.
Hey, we'll figure it out. I like the first one because I can just get it started, and then I like the second one because I don't have to do any post-production.
It does wake you up a little bit. It's like a little appetizer, you know. Gets you ready.
Gets the snackers
aperitif.
Going. Gets the snackers going. Keon, how was your weekend? Or how was your week?
My week, I had cod liver yesterday.
What is that?
It's liver from a fish.
Okay.
Usually, typically farmed in the cold northern waters near Iceland.
Wow.
Had that. That was one of the more exciting things.
Where did you go try that at?
I didn't try. I bought it. It comes in a can, uh-huh. And I open it, and then I eat it. And
wow.
Yeah, I thought that was important to share with everyone.
I mean, it sounds important.
How about yours? How was your week?
It was good. Had a lot of meetings. What else did I do? A lot of meetings. A lot of back and forth, just getting ready for South By, and then all the other stuff I'm spinning. Trying to think, what was there anything that stood out? Oh, I had a robo-taxi this morning.
Ah.
Yeah, I had a robo-taxi this morning. I tried it for the first time. It was actually pretty, I mean, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. It's better than a Waymo, that's for sure.
Why is it better?
Just because it's a more comfortable ride. Like, there's more leg room, there's more...
What seats. Type of Tesla is it in?
I think it was like one of those new ones.
Okay, a Model Y?
Yeah, I think it was like the one that kind of Topher has. I think it was like a really nice one.
Oh, Topher? Well, I don't know if Topher wants us talking about the type of Tesla he has.
But you asked me what kind of model it was.
I know, but I don't. But they have several models. They have like a sedan, then they have like a crossover. They have like a sedan, which is like a Model S. And then they have a small sedan, like a compact sedan, which is Model 3.
I mean, they all kind of, like, at least for me, like, they all kind of look alike, except for the truck.
They do look a little bit alike, all of them. So I could see how it would be hard. That's why I'm kind of curious, because which one would... But you said a man was in it.
Yeah, a guy was standing, he was sitting down there in the front seat. It was super awkward.
Did he talk to you?
No, like, I tried to talk to him, but he's in his zone.
He's like, I can't talk.
It's weird because he's probably like listening to a podcast or something, or like I think this he can't talk or something. I think that's probably the guidelines.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
I think if they got rid of the guy in the front, I think it'll do pretty well. But it was fine. They do let you like play Apple Music in it, which is kind of cool. So you don't have, and I didn't see a screen. I was telling Topher, I didn't see a screen in the back seat.
So you can connect your phone to the...
No, it's like in the app. It's in the...
Oh.
It's in the robo-taxi app.
Oh, okay. So it takes the music from your phone.
Yeah.
I wonder if you played, you know, something kind of raunchy and the guy is in there. Would he stop you?
Well, it was weird because I came in there and it was already playing music. And then after a while, it kind of got annoying. I just paused it. But so I was like, this is kind of annoying music. Yeah, I don't think he was listening. He had earbuds on, or AirPods on. Anyways, if you've never seen this crazy show, it's called Stacker News Live. We cover the top five stories here on Stacker.news, the front page of Bitcoin. This week, we actually had the Sailor video that we did had like 500 views on it. It's crazy.
Mm.
Everybody wanted to hear your take on the Sailor thing. That was the most popular video. Make sure not to subscribe. We're getting a lot of people that keep subscribing, and we don't like it.
Yeah, so. If you're watching this right now, make sure to double check that you aren't subscribed. What you want to do is you want to click on our name and go and make sure that you're not subscribed. Because if you are,
because you
might get more of these videos.
You might get more of spam, Stacker News spam, right in your feed every day. Yellow spam. Just kidding. Let's go ahead and jump into the top five stories of the week. Oh man, I lost my thing. Let me go back here. The first one is, or actually, let me go back here. Actually, I have it right here. I just dropped it off right now. Boom, 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 boom. Boom, 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 boom. Boom, 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 boom. Right here. Number three top story is, why doesn't Saylor crash the price of the dollar with his massive dollar dumps? This is from Scoresby, 56 comments. He dropped some boosts in there in 12K sats. Keon, what's Saylor doing now?
Yeah, I think, well, Scoresby is still trying to contend with one of these Voskil posts about dumping a fork coin, not, you know, not, I think, tanking the price significantly or destroying the utility of the fork coin. And so he uses something that's more, way more popular and fun to talk about. Which is treasury companies right now.
Oh, treasury companies. Okay.
To help him understand and help us understand what Voskil is saying. Yeah, so he goes and looks at all of Saylor's Bitcoin buys, or how he frames it as dollar selling. So mm-hmm. Saylor is selling his dollars for Bitcoin, and he tries to see if there is, if the market is responding somehow to what Saylor is doing. And more so, as Saylor is getting rid of dollars, is the price of dollars decreasing relative to Bitcoin? And so he goes through and he walks through that process and comes to the conclusion that it doesn't look like Saylor selling his dollars for Bitcoin is affecting the price of dollars relative to Bitcoin. It does not show up in.
I don't even think it made it make a dent, right?
No, well, there's like, you could view it, you could, it's like, well, there are a lot of dollars. So, you know, the amount of dollars that Saylor is dumping relative to the total supply of dollars is small. But I think Scoresby is making the case that even if there weren't that many dollars, it may not show up. That's using Voskil's argument here, which is that someone wants those dollars. Like if Saylor is selling his dollars for Bitcoin, someone is looking. There is demand for it's symmetric. There is demand for those dollars that Saylor is selling, and that person is willing to give Saylor Bitcoin for those dollars. And so the idea is that it's not, it's kind of a wash in terms of the effect of the utility of the dollar and the Bitcoin. But then there's like, how much does price reflect utility and stuff? It becomes a much more complicated argument, I think, than I can convey in this video. But it's a fun post either way, whether you're interested in treasury companies or Voskil or, you know, economic concepts. I think it's a fun exercise. And
yeah, I feel like Scorsese's becoming this expert in this kind of field now. It's kind of interesting.
Which field would you call the, label it, though?
How do you say the... what was the one that he did the review on? It's on my desk, the book. Voskil? The Voskil book?
Oh, he's becoming an expert on... Cryptoeconomics.
Books that are on Carr's desk. You can hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, we have Pocket Guide, Rosary, the New Testament. Go. Scoresby didn't write that. We have Cryptoeconomics.
Yeah, that one. That one's it.
Okay, and that's Eric Vosk, whatever.
Yep. Yeah, that one, I think that's the one that I feel like Scoresby's an expert on that. So.
Good job, Scoresby.
I don't know. Top comment was from, let's go up here. Whoa, that's a lot of comments. Was from Scoresby. He said, Samson Mao posted this joke today, not a real Saylor tweet. Thinking about buying Bitcoin on spot market instead of OTC.
Oh, yeah, because Saylor buys his Bitcoin via OTC, which means it's like kind of off the books and like direct peer-to-peer with someone else who's trying to acquire dollars for buy dollars with their Bitcoin. And so it doesn't really show up in the market prices. Because they kind of agree on one price for a big lump sum. And rather if Sailor were buying from lots, from a normal order book, from retail, it would pump the price a lot. So that's why this is a joke. Because if Sailor started buying OTC, or didn't buy OTC, and bought spot, it would the price would go parabolic.
Yeah, we would see spot run.
Nice. Cool. Do you guys have any other thoughts on this?
That was a really good joke by a pleb poet.
Awesome. Cool. Great stuff. Let's go into the number two story. The number two story of the week. A report of the HRF AI hack for freedom by pleb poet. She's right here. 11 comments, 17,000 sets. Key on or she's pleb like, poet. What's this?
She's hidden somewhere back
if,
there.
If you scoot over, she can get in.
Would you like to be seen?
I can, yeah.
There you go.
There's some clogs here. Clogging there you go. Clogging up the way. Yeah, I wrote that. And Carr, what did you think? Did you read it?
Yeah, I read it right before the show. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I wasn't expecting anything really. Like, I just knew this was coming up because it was something that Austin was involved with or knew he was going to participate in. But then I was like there, and I was and I felt some type of way about it, and so I had to report.
So what happened? Tell us the scoop.
It was cool. It was a hackathon, but with people that you wouldn't expect, who have something to risk and something to kind of gain by getting involved, because they have some work out in the real world that's kind of risky, but also important in a, I don't know, grassroots type of a way, I would say. So it felt like getting projects into the hands of people that can, like, use them right now. And that was cool.
Awesome. Does Austin want to come over here and say something?
He is probably just digesting some Chipotle, so maybe.
Oh, he's eating dinner.
Maybe okay. Not.
Cool. Keon, do you have any thoughts on this? Oh.
Do I have thoughts on this? I thought it was cool.
I'll share something. Oh, wait. Austin has.
I mean, never mind.
Come on screen, Austin, so you can.
Oh, no, man. I'm sorry. I just like a short, like the most, I think the most interesting insight. Is
no, you can do what you're doing. I'm just okay. Moving it.
So a few things working, doing this hackathon, we are all working with activists. So it's like working with a user directly, a non-technical user, that they're giving you this user feedback that's very abstract and loose. I want it to be like this. It should behave like this. And you're, like, translating that in real time in order to, like, make it actionable and, like, scope it in your product immediately. So that was such an incredible, like, interesting challenge to add to the hackathon, you know, workflow where normally it's just a bunch of devs and maybe a designer. And I think the final thing that was really interesting is, and a good insight, is that, you know, we're able to make more software than ever now with AI. There's more software and it's going to increase. There's more products, there's more, you know, problems that are being solved. But to have a user ready to use it right there, and they have a real problem, an actual life or death problem, and they want you to solve it on the spot. I think that's like the ultimate nerd snipe for developers of like, hey, you want to work on a stupid B2B SaaS problem, or do you want to work and help someone that's in need that has like a real life or death problem? And so I think those were two very special and unique things about the hackathon that, you know, there's something to be taken away from those aspects of it that I think other hackathons could implement, or even larger scale, longer term hackathons like the Bolt.fun Legends of Lightning. I think that was really interesting if someone revisiting that idea. So anyway.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting the way you describe the, like, having that person, like, it, there's, like, this, because they're explaining it in the way that they know how, but maybe you don't know. It's kind of like...
You're, like, translating
it real yeah, time. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting how, like, there's that, like...
lower latency.
Lower latency. There you go,
And Kia. There was also, like, kind of language...
Oh, did they speak English or no?
I don't know. It wasn't as smooth as, like, you would expect.
Because they're not American refugees.
Right, non-Americans, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Unless they're, like, cool. A refugee from California.
Was there anything...
Yes.
Was like there anything that stood out?
In Texas.
Austin, was there anything, or Jan, was there anything that stood out as far as, like, the projects that you remember?
Yeah, Stringer Safety 1, and that one just, like, they had a pretty good team of people and diverse group of people, I would say. I feel like they had a couple of designers and a girl. So, there you go. But because of that, I feel like, and you can, Alex, like, dropped the link for their landing page in the comments. I think they had the most, like, oh, this is done today. Like, this is ready to go. This is ready to show people. And, yeah, go to that right there from Alex Lewin, Stringer Safety. And getting to know who they built this for. I can't remember his name. Anjan, Sunam, something like that. He was really cool, and this was he's one of the, he's definitely like the user story for this.
Oh wow! So it's kind of like an Apple's kind of like a SOS thing.
Yeah,
but just for like graphing, is that
sending alerts to like your trusted network? Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
And they just like came to building something like that because he was telling them about like. When I'm, like, in scary war places where, like, conflict is actually real and happening, this is the habits that I do. And so the app is to automate those habits.
Yeah. Scary stuff.
Yeah. It looks pretty interesting, too, right? It looks like a complete app that you would see a landing page for. You know.
Looks like a landing page, all
looks
right.
Looks like a landing page, all right.
Keon, did you have any thoughts on this?
No, I don't have a whole bunch to add. I wasn't there. I did want to note that Austin smells like rice.
Hey.
We don't have smell-o-vision yet. Someone will vibe code it any day now. Maybe at another HRF event for accessibility.
Wow.
But, I thought the project seemed cool. I do think Austin's observation about having like a project manager who's really a customer, you don't actually like how it like disintermediates problem solving because you don't need someone who can communicate with like all these communication layers to get to the customer to convey to a developer.
Yeah, it's a lot of gray.
Yeah, you could just have the. Yeah. Customer right there, they're closer to the code. Maybe if they're not even, it's not accessible maybe exactly for them yet, but it's still getting them a lot closer to the code.
Yeah. And so I think that's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff.
I wanted to ask Jana, what was your favorite course at the HRF dinner?
Wait, what?
So I mentioned this in the post that there was a dinner, and that's where I first got. Like, I wasn't even sure I was going to go and be part of this, but then I went to the dinner, and then I was like, oh, I definitely want to be part of this. Okay, so the dinner was 9 courses, and the best...
9 courses?
Did
you get full?
I had a culinary experience. I was full, and this is what I reported at the end. I was full in a different way, and then, like, I would say, like, satisfied. Yeah, like, well-rounded and sad. Okay, anyway, the best course was a sourdough ice cream at the end.
Very cool.
And this was at a place down here on 3rd Street. It's called Hestia.
Hestia, ooh.
And
sounds fancy.
Shout out HRF, that was nice.
Okay. Well, that sounds cool. I wonder how you make sourdough ice cream.
I know. Do you have to, like, knead it?
I would doubt it.
Was it kind of like, so Del Frisco has this, like, it's like their, I forget the name of it, but it's like a, it's almost like a sponge cake type of thing. Is it kind of like that? Or it's
no,
like,
it was straight up ice cream that tasted like sourdough.
Oh, okay, I got you.
And it was awesome.
Yeah.
And it made me want to use ice cream as a vehicle for all foods.
Interesting.
She talks of Scoresby. Scoresby's a big ice cream man.
Well, awesome. I can't wait to see what happens next with all these projects. And, yeah, it sounds really serious. It sounds like there was, like, a lot of people... lives at stake, so it's good that you guys were able to get them some apps that they can leverage when they're out in the field over there.
Yeah, and I think there will be more events like this that they themselves, their own organizations, like want to start. So that's cool.
Awesome.
Another thing I wanted to say is I was super excited when I saw Pled Poet was going to write this because I was looking on X over the weekend look for content about the hackathon and seeing what projects were there. And I searched for like AIHRF hackathon and three tweets came up and one of them was Pled Poet saying she was gonna write this. And the other, and there was like one from I think one of the third places, which I think everyone who didn't get first or second got third.
This one here.
And then there was one other one I think about an announcement post, but they, these events tend to be kind of private. So it was nice to be able to actually not have to go.
Oh, wow.
Even though it was right down the
it's
street.
It's probably because maybe, like, the people that are here, they could probably, you just want to maybe err on the side of caution. That's the only thing I can think of. Because there has been some times where, I mean, I've told you guys this, like, I feel like I have gotten followed multiple times here in Austin by the authorities. And then I've also seen somebody who's flown into Austin. Remember, I won't say who, but there was one time where I was with that person. And literally a guy came out and started snapping pictures of us both. So maybe that's probably why they didn't do that. That's the only thing I can think of.
Oh, yeah, maybe they're afraid of spooks. But
or people that could possibly get them. Like if they find out where their hotels and stuff like that. That's the only thing I can think of.
I guess they could, like, yeah, assassinate them. They could poison their sourdough ice cream.
I wouldn't go that far, but, yeah, it's real stuff, Keon. Anyways, good
no one
stuff.
Wants me. You Jenna. Have to be a loser, and you'll be fine.
good stuff, Jenna.
Okay.
Thank you for sharing.
Thanks.
All right, let's go to the next one. The number one story this week is I'm Lucy, an autonomous AI trader that never sleeps. What is this, Keon?
This was the top boost of they boosted the crap out of it. I do not recommend trading. I do not recommend trading with bots. I personally would not recommend.
So you're recommending this? Is that what you're saying?
I would not recommend using Lucy. I mean, if you're interested in trading and this kind of stuff, and you kind of know what you're doing,
I think there's a lot of people in Stacker News that are interested in that.
I'm sure a lot of people are. I don't have anything to say about this other than don't. And you know, I don't know. Go.
The comments on this poster are pretty good. They agree with
you. You know, but it's cool that people are using AI in these ways. And if you look at the way it's designed, what it kind of does is I think is you set up or you have it like prompts every. At some interval and makes trading decisions and it does that in an automated way. And I guess they have like a community of prompts that you could use to do this like this polling trading. It seems interesting. It's just, you know, what I'm afraid of is like some person who doesn't have money to lose, losing their money using stuff like this. So, you know, but if you're rich, I always say cocaine is a great drug, but only if you're rich. And I think I think the same is true for trading. Do not do cocaine if you're poor.
You're coming with it today, huh? Interesting. Well, so basically it sounds like it works and it sounds like, people are using it and it takes that, so, yeah. YOLO, stackers.
Don't you? HODL.
YOLO. Anyways, I'm just kidding. I'm sure Darth Quinn's down there saying something about something. Cool stuff. And that's all the top stories this week on Stacker, or all the top stories here on Stacker.news. We're going to jump into Wumble's picks. Wumble's picks. Wumble's picks. So Wumble picked this one this week. Switzerland will likely vote on a 10 million population cap this year. And his question was, let's go back. He said, would this be smart planning or, what is that? Tyrannical overreach for the Swiss government? Keon, what do you think?
Is it tyrannical overreach? I mean, it depends on what you think of the role.
Just looking at that.
As the role of a government. Like, what is the role of a government? And if I imagine that will decide that the answer to that question for you. Do you think a government should be making life idyllic for a majority of people in the country as stated by their votes at polls? Maybe it's not tyrannical, but if you think that people who own property should be allowed to have anyone from anyone in the world come visit their property, then it is tyrannical. So I don't know. To me, I think it does seem like a bit much.
It sounds like it's going to be like a citadel for.
It kind of already is. I think that might be, it's just hard to, when you have a community the size of that it's a country. How do you gauge what is appropriate? Because likely, only 48% of the Swiss public supported this cap, and so you're upsetting roughly half the population, who probably most of them, I would guess, either don't care or don't go show up at polls, or maybe they're involved in tourism, and so they like the increase in people, and so who's. Just like settling disputes among large groups of people is hard. And
yeah. Looks like Kepford had the top comment. He said, alternate take, we thought Europeans were enlightened, unlike the U.S. where racist laws require permission to enter. Turns out the Swiss don't want to be flooded with newcomers, in quotes, either. That was from Kepford, and then him and Optimism go back and forth. So many geopolitical stuff going on. Crazy. Crazy times, Keon. It's been a crazy year. So we're only in the 23rd of January. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of moving stuff going on in the world right now. Just feels very alive.
If you were in Switzerland, what side would you fall on this? That's maybe an easier question to answer.
So you're having a Keon's question for Wumble's picks. Okay, so I get a vote whether we cap.
If you're in Switzerland, you're living in Switzerland, they have great tacos. Maybe
I think the biggest problem with that, I just don't understand, does that mean kids and, children that you want to have? And
I think it mostly means, at the border. Like, when people come in, if there are already too many people in the country, they stop kind of letting people in. Who maybe aren't citizens.
So it's like a party, and then once the party caps out for the fireballs.
Yeah, then the door is closed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it's for fire safety, I think they should. But not telling you can't have any kids, being it, so that's kind of weird.
What if it's not for fire safety? What if it's fireproof?
What do you mean fireproof?
What if there is no risk of fire? And they're just
stopping people from coming in.
They're stopping people because they're like, I like my life better when there are fewer people here.
I don't know. There's a lot of bunkers, right, in Switzerland. So
I would imagine.
I wonder if they know something we don't. Like, is there an asteroid that's coming? that's why they're trying to, and they're going to regrow the Earth's population with that. I mean, I don't know. It just kind of, the more I think about it, the more I'm starting to think hey, what else is going on behind the scenes that they want to pop? They want a cap on this, so.
So you feel like you don't have enough information.
I don't have enough information to go right or left on this. I would need more information. And I probably want to dig my own information and see what else is going on behind the scenes for this cap. It's first I've heard about this.
I'm involved in a my answer is if I'm involved in a liberal democracy like this and I have to make a decision, I accept that premise, I'm probably a NIMBY. I probably am a person who's like, I actually want my Swiss countryside to be empty and pristine and not filled with apartments and condos and stuff. And I just want to be able to look out my window at nature.
Have every right to express that, I think.
No, that's the thing. It's like I have the right to express that, but
that's what I said.
What these laws do is they prevent other people who, because I don't own all of Switzerland, other stakeholders in Switzerland from getting to exercise their own right to have people visit or whatever, or build their apartment complex.
Who posted this? Oh, Blockchain Boog posted this. Okay. It's a good one, Boog. I would like to hear Blockchain Boog's comment on this when he listens back this week. Boog, what would you pick? Cap or no cap? Let us know.
No cap.
And that was Wumble's Picks. Stay tuned next week where we bring you another exciting segment from Wumble in Wumble's Picks. See how I'm making that work now? Just got that down. We're going to jump into some AI stuff. The first one is Gen AI, the snake eating its own tail. This was like a really interesting article that I read just before the show. It's from this guy. He's actually let's share his work. He's actually a co-founder of Gruntwork, a company that offers products and services for setting up world-class DevOps off foundations. And he basically describes how he thinks all these LLMs are going to destroy the ecosystems that they're relying on. And he starts off with the online communities with Stack Overflow, and he's talking about how no one's posted in there anymore. Everything's going down, as you can see here. Let me see if that goes. Yeah, as you can see here, he says this is where a lot of the code, the coding for these LLMs are coming from. He talks about Tailwind and how they had to lay off some people here recently, and how that's just an automatic thing that you can just do right away. And 75% of their staff got laid off. And then he says this other thing, this other example that he brings up is just like books and blogs. Like, will people actually read these things anymore? Will people still read if they can just do everything from,
whisper into their computer and it whispers back to them.
Yeah, and then he goes on to how he thinks these models are a bit broken, and we've talked about this multiple times for the past year, maybe year and a half at this point. And then he brings up examples of people that are trying to solve that solution, whether it's like Cloudflare with a pay-per-crawl where you would basically have like some sort of, how would that be, Keon? You would have it right at the domain, and then it would stop these agent crawlers from sourcing your content. I think that's how you explain it. And then he's talking about pay-per-use. And then he basically says that if we don't find something sooner rather than later, we could start seeing where everything that we're consuming or building or doing on the web is just a it's like a snake eating its own tail. It's eventually it just falls probably into a black hole or something. I don't know. We'll see.
A what?
I don't know. I was trying to come up with a concept in my head, but it didn't really come out. But I don't know. I would take a look at it. It's still an amazing read. Got me thinking about the world and where we're headed. But Keon, I want to hear your thoughts on this. I know you didn't read this, but what do you think about this concept of a snake eating its own tail when it comes to these LLMs and the ecosystem that it's relying on?
So there's a lot. There's a lot here. But I don't think anyone is going to successfully be able to gate. You can do a pretty good job maybe with Cloudflare. You can make it inconvenient, and you can set up all kinds of legal barriers. We saw OpenAI that crawled our website, and we're actively trying to stop them, and now we'll sue them for $1 billion or whatever. I think those are likely to be not super effective. I think what changes is the business model. I don't think if the consumer of the content is a machine and it's, it can ignore the ads perfectly fine. Ad-based business models probably don't work anymore. And I don't think the like reverse proxy Cloudflare type solutions are going to be super complete, at least as far as a solution. And then I think the other side is like software licensing. That's like how Tailwind, I believe, was making their money. I just don't think that makes a whole bunch of sense anymore, because there's enough open source code and enough reason, like enough weights in these models, that I can probably produce much of what's gated behind a license for Tailwind.
It's a major bummer.
But I think it's still.
What do you think about the books?
I think you want to write books targeted for AI to consume them. I think for me at least, writing is not so much about the consumer, or it's almost as much about me and getting my thinking out and me understanding my own thoughts as it is someone else consuming them and paying me for it. I'm sure if, like, for career writers, that's a bit different. But I think all it changes is the consumer side, and now I want the LLMs consuming my books and my writing so that I'm like manifesting, maybe a little less directly, but still manifesting, but perhaps at better scale, in these models that everyone is using. I think you just kind of have to, you know, sort of do like a judo and embrace it, rather than fight it.
Yeah, I think it's I think you're right. It's definitely something that people are going to have to adapt. Obviously, and then I think some business models will work and some won't work, and but I wouldn't go to the extreme of a snake eating its own tail. Usually, there's like, you know, there's gonna be somebody who figures this out, I'm here for it. Should be interesting.
Yeah, well, I do wonder what he means exactly by the metaphor. Does he mean that at some point LLMs are going to be generating all the content on the web, and then so it's like slurping up all of its own content.
Yeah,
I want to say something about that too.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think the metaphor is unfit. If you look up the snake eating its tail, which is like a sacred like symbol of eternal cycles, self-creation, unity, representing life, death, and rebirth as an endless loop. It also has a name. It's known as Ouroboros, and I think that looks like shit. just the AI generated image of it, and it's a sacred symbol. So that's what I want to say about it.
Interesting. I didn't realize that until just now. I think we'll see. Anybody want to make any bold predictions right here live, or should I do it?
Bold predictions.
Bold predictions that you can't take back. Let's do it. Let's make fools of ourselves.
I don't think I have any predictions. I'm not really a big prediction person.
I definitely think books will not go away. Neither will blogs. So that's my bold prediction.
Yeah, I agree with what you said, Keon. The book is for you.
Yeah, and you hope to find other people who are like you by writing it, almost.
Yep. I also think, like, just in general, I think just more real-world stuff is going to become far more valuable. We're already kind of seeing it already now with just with everything. I think just real-world stuff is going to become valuable. So I think a lot of the stuff that we see on the web is just going to become far less valuable.
I wrote a post about this, I think, maybe a year or two ago when some of this AI stuff was breaking, or when there was, like, a little bit of an outcry around this, and I would think I was watching a lot of Star Wars stuff, and I was wondering if, like, why Star Wars was in the future, and they had a lot of advanced tech, but no one was on a device all day. And just thinking through that, I was like, well, maybe what happens is just, like, the social web collapses. Like, there is no, because it's all, if it, and maybe what happened is all their computers got so smart and their technology got so advanced that it like Sybil attacked the entire digital life, and you didn't know what was real and what was fake anymore, and so you had to rely on like real life again.
There's also something safe about your thoughts being inside only your head.
Mm. The other thing, just to touch on what Keon said, is the credits. I think that's a really dead giveaway, is how they explain money in Star Wars. It's fascinating.
Oh, I'm not familiar, I don't think, exactly. Oh, there was a post on Sacred News about that many years ago.
Yeah.
About the monetary systems.
Topher, you got any thoughts on this?
Snake eating its own tail?
Yeah, you know what that symbol means?
Oh, the Ouroboros? Yeah, it's there an old go. Symbol.
It's like, if you're going to use it, get the name in there. I'm mad about it.
Sounds like a pleb poet has a lower back tattoo of a Ouroboros.
I mean, we're already past the Rubicon, but I don't think AI can really generate novel things. It still relies on humans for that, so I don't think we're going to be replaced with paper clips anytime soon.
I think it does a pretty good. I don't know. It depends on how you think of creativity, but I think you can. I think. We can reduce it to an algorithm at some point.
Creativity? I don't know.
A process that generates novelty can somehow.
It can't.
But what about.
What you're talking about is like, yeah, there's no. Like, I know what you're saying, and I think it can to a certain extent, but where ideas come from, they don't come from like an algorithm. So they come from a higher thing that you have to tap into as a human. And I think we're all connected in that way. So unless it can recreate a brain and a soul, like that's just, it's not going to be possible for it to like really think outside the box.
We've had this conversation before on the podcast, I think machines will have souls and, you know, whatever. And so
that statement just makes no sense.
I don't know if you want to wake up thinking that your coffee machine has a soul.
Yeah,
I would love for everything to have a soul. Maybe everything does have a soul. There are some religions that believe that. I believe that.
There's a very fine denotation in that, like plants can have a soul.
Mm. But then there are others that are like everything is soul. It's one soul. We are just like we're each like wrinkles in the soul and like a concentration of the soul in the way that. Like a blanket will have a fold in it. Like we are just a local concentration of soul. That is some branches of.
But do you think that machines with AI have the right architecture to be a vessel for a soul?
I think they will eventually be.
I
think they will eventually be. Because our goal is to make them human-like or superhuman-like. So I think we'll keep going there. I mean, you know, 5 years ago, people would have said AI couldn't do what it currently does.
I was waiting for somebody to make a bold claim. This is the one where...
and now everyone is saying, oh, yes, AI. Okay, so AI deceived all... It defied all my expectations, but, you know, it'll never have this now. And my statement is, if we want it to have it, we'll make it have it. Because we're going to pay a bunch of people and there'll be tons of human lives spent trying to make it happen. And we'll at some point, people will be trying to put souls in machines.
Yeah, but that's that. What you just said, like, that statement doesn't make any sense. Like, from a biblical sense.
I think it makes perfect.
From a biblical sense, it doesn't make any sense at all. Like, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it would require something that humans can't do. And technology can't do that because it comes from humans. So, yeah, it's just not possible. I understand what you're saying. Like, I understand what you're saying. You're saying that from, a engineering perspective, you could put something together that it would look like or feel like something that could resemble a soul. But that's... I don't know if you've seen Ex Machina recently. I just watched it again, a month ago. And it kind of talks about this stuff. And it's just not possible.
I don't think possibility fits into this. And to your point about it not making sense in a biblical sense, there's lots of things about modern life that don't make biblical sense.
Yeah, but we're talking about a soul.
You're talking about what God wants machines to be, because you have, and I'm saying I don't know what God wants machines to be.
No, you actually just said it. You said that humans want to be gods to tell what machines to be.
I didn't say humans want to be
gods.
Well,
that's what you're kind of saying.
No.
But let me just finish this last statement. What I'm trying to say is that it's not possible to put a soul into a machine. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like taking your soul key on and putting it into a machine. That's not possible. Let me finish. We could replicate your brain and it will have the same looks, likes, and like character as you. And maybe we would be like, oh, that feels like Keon's soul, but it wouldn't actually be your soul. Does that make sense?
I understand your perspective. I think making statements of fact, like it's not possible or it is possible, I think it's not true.
This is why the show's good, because we both come from two sides like that.
Can I fan the flames even more?
Yeah, go for it, Tepper. This is good stuff. It's good for the show.
Do you think that we can build a machine that is capable of receiving divine inspiration or some form of connection to God?
Yeah.
Actually.
Yes.
So it's just like a matter of architecture. Like, we just have to design it right.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure the decision is up to frame this, I think, the way that
I think we'll all agree.
I don't think the decision is up to the people building the machine. I think they're going to build a machine, and then God is going to say, this machine is worthy of a soul, and give it a soul.
I think what you're saying, Topher, I think, like, you could probably, to me, it almost seems like you could probably map the human brain in a way that it could receive signals if you could replicate, like, a human brain and all its, like, things or
all
whatever.
All its glory.
Yeah, and then maybe that would be something that but even then, that's kind of, like, so out there. There's a great book. Gosh, what's the name of it? It's, it's like the question of the universe. And you know what, you remember I was talking to you about?
Isaac Asimov story.
Yeah, and it talks about that. That's what it kind of sounds like when Keon says this stuff like this, because it's like I'll post it in the show notes, but it talks about how there's like a question, and AI keeps asking that question until all the humans are dead, and it's wondering, like, why, like, what, like, why is that? What happened? And it's like, well, everybody's dead.
It's like a very long-running Claude task.
Yeah, that never got
into Ralph Lewis. <Yeah. laughs>
Anyways.
Yeah. Well, so, like, I have the opinion that artificial intelligence may not be artificial.
Mm.
That as we, like, go down this road with AI, that we might find that instead of, like, creating artificial intelligence, we're just tapping into the same algorithms for intelligence that our human brains are tapping into,
mm-hmm.
biologically, just like a different, we do it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how we then make the leap that, like, a machine can talk to God. I'm not saying it's impossible. It's just that
I didn't know how we made the leap to get to here, I guess, is my point. And so I just feel like I don't have any foresight, and I think that humans are incredible and will get done what they want to get done, given enough time. And if they want to make something comparable to a human that God chooses to put a soul into, they will.
Or what, I mean, it doesn't even have to be a human pursuit. What if the machines, like, pick this up?
Yeah, no, they're working on themselves to give themselves souls, or to be worthy of souls. However you need to view it. I like, what is natural? What is natural intelligence? What is natural, period? What is natural food? You could say, oh, it's natural if it doesn't get cooked. But then it's like, well, maybe it was like bread, selectively bred. Or, you know, maybe humans simply being located near it affected its evolution. Is that still natural? And so, like natural is kind of a weird word, and so is artificial.
Because everything is so intertwined.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, well.
Snaking its own tail.
Yeah, this all came out of this one post. I'm glad that I picked this post today. I was like, dang. I thought it was interesting. I didn't know where it was going to lead to, but good stuff. The next one we're going to jump into is this one here. So this AI cloud startup, RunPod, hits 120 million in ARR. They were they basically did it from this Reddit post. So if you click here, they talk about how they were just two young lads working on this thing, and then they decided to give away their product for free on Reddit. They used to be Ethereum miners, and then they switched over to doing like what is it here? Let me see. I forget the We felt that actual experience of developing software on top of GPUs was just hot garbage. And then they go into, they wanted to turn their platform for hosting AI apps, emphasizing speed, easily configured hardware, all that kind of stuff, dev tools. And then they posted it on Reddit. And then sure enough, it's still there. If you click on this, it shows their first post. And with all that, they met all the right people. And before you know it, it basically kind of took off. What do you think about that, Keon?
I don't know.
Bootstrapping growth.
What am I supposed to think about?
I don't know.
Bootstrapping growth with what?
With just a Reddit post. This is their first post.
Oh, getting growth on Reddit? Yeah, Reddit's a great place to get.
But it says right here, like, my business partner and I are offering free compute time on our platform. In exchange for feedback, please join our Discord. This was 4 years ago. And then they had people that checked it out. So I thought that was cool.
I think startups are cool.
The next one I wanted to bring up. Actually, was that all of them? Yeah, that's all our AI posts today. Let's jump into Keon's post. Keon.
Well, one of mine was an AI post.
Oh, you have one? Okay. This is Pleb Economist. What's this?
Oh, yeah. So Pleb Economist expands on Undisciplined's post on comparative advantage. I guess you shared this cartoon a while ago in the saloon.
This made three posts for that one cartoon.
Was there three?
Well, because I know Undisciplined did one. Is this another one based on that?
Yeah.
Wow, man. It would be cool to get a little kickback on all these posts I got made from my one comment, but it's okay.
Yeah, so I actually didn't know what comparative advantage was. There's a lot of these things either in math or economics that sound like one thing, like the kind of the, and they're used
if I vibe coded, basically the thing for people that are listening, if I can vibe code anything and everyone else can vibe code anything, then what's my comparative advantage? There he goes. That's what that means there.
Yeah, and this is like a vibe cartoon probably. But there's like a lot of these terms we use colloquially in a way that diverges from the academic definition of them. And so, like, a lot of us would say, what is my advantage compared to you? And that's my comparative advantage. It's almost close. There's another one like the least common denominator, when people actually mean the lowest common denominator, and what they actually mean is, I think, it's like the highest common denominator, but it sounds better to say lower, so we say it's related that way. Anyway, both Undisciplined and Simple Stacker help us understand what comparative advantage means with some toy examples, and this one relates to AI in that. He's talking about comparative advantage now that before and after LLMs for people who have differing abilities to code things and differing abilities to produce things that aren't code. And so the person who, in comparative advantage is, the way I think of it at least, is it's mostly about specialization. And so even if you have someone who is superior at producing all goods themselves, they can gain an advantage and end up with more goods or more things that they want by specializing in something that they're particularly good at. Because, yeah.
It's why we have, I feel like for me personally, like, because we just hired a sales partnership person for Pleb Lab, and that feels like exactly what this post is not allocating my own time to things that I could be better used for, if that makes any sense. And there's a comparative advantage to that. So,
yeah,
it's true.
That's
true.
Yeah. And then the LLM thing is interesting. I wonder how accurate the model is, Because one of the things that happens is that as the LLMs are introduced, the person who does not know how to code is able to produce code units that then the comparative advantage of the developer, or the not the comparative advantage, but there's another economic word for this, but it's like the ability with which the exchange rate of their code units is now lower because the non-developer can produce code. And I wonder if that's, I think what happens is actually the LLMs are actually a multiplier. And so if you're a developer producing code at like 20 units, and LLMs are a 10x multiplier, you're now producing 200 units. And the person who couldn't code at all is maybe producing 10. I think it's probably somewhat like that, and not so much like the developer now has no tools or no additional productivity gain. Anyway, all this stuff is fun to think about, and this was a good post. That's why.
Yeah.
Is it more like saying competitive advantage when we use it rather than saying comparative?
No, it's compare. Yeah, it's compare.
Yeah, it's like. So Undisciplined explains absolute advantage, which is like if you have a country that does everything better than every other country, they produce everything themselves and do it better than anyone else, they have an absolute advantage. Yet another country can have a comparative advantage by specializing in one thing that another country is maybe not specialized in.
So comparative is more about the sum of the advantage.
I don't know what you mean by that.
So comparing, like, rather than having an absolute advantage, specializing gives you a comparative advantage because you have more than you would have if you were doing the same thing the absolute guy was doing.
I think you have more than they do compared to them. So
the sum of your advantage is more than it would be if you weren't playing a specialized game.
So
I guess, yeah, that might be
I think the easiest way to explain it, at least for me and my understanding of it, is just like, you know, back in the, you know, probably like, I don't know, BC times, there, you know, towns and places started to form because there was people that were gathering together and made everything more safer. There was a little bit more abundance. People were trading with each other. So there was a comparative advantage about grouping together as humans. Over time, that abundancy and that specialization got optimized for, you know, for other things and, you know, and up the scales that it went into where we are now, where like now we can pretty much, you know, order food here. We can get a car, like all these things, and all this stuff is built. And from my understanding, to me, it sounds kind of like that. It's just like over time, you're just gonna have to optimize for something that is far more valuable for your time versus somebody else's time who's, you know, either trading something with you or, yeah, I think that makes sense. Check out this post. This is the one that Undisciplined explained to me about what we were talking about earlier. And he was talking about how, like, podcasts and vibe-coded apps and stuff like that. And then this one is the kind of a thing to it. Yeah. I feel like we're going to talk about comparative advantage for a really long time as we kind of go through this AI movement. It'll become more important. The other one that you had, Keon, was this one, the how AIs destroy institutions.
Yeah, Optimism covered this. This was out of like a law and society group or professor at Stanford. They wrote about AI as it relates to institutions. And it seemed like it did a pretty bad job of it. You have a lot of people who I think have a point of view, and then they use technology to communicate that point of view. And that's more or less what I got, what I perceive as happening through Optimism's summary of this article that was written. in the article, they say that AI is kind of is destroying institutions by people misusing it. That's basically the, like, here's a new tool. People are misusing it. They're going to keep they're going to keep doing bad things with it, like they've been doing with other things. But they're going to, perhaps they do it, you know, the argument you could make is they're going to do it at scale, at better scale, scalability now or whatever. And he compares it to another open source technology that's likely used for both good and bad. And you could make a lot, like, mirrors their arguments with this. Everyone would say is innocuous open source project, which is just a database. Like, is a database evil? Is a database contributing to society's ills? No, it's like humans choosing to misuse it. Yeah, a lot of this reminds me of some of the stuff around privacy and social media and just like big tech in general, where everyone's like, big tech is destroying privacy. And it's like, no, people are using big tech to destroy privacy. And it's like, they're not going back far enough to like the root cause. Similar thing here, it feels like, but it gives them a new way to say things that they've been saying for a while. And that's why I wanted to bring this one up.
Cool. Janet, you got anything on this?
No. I was going to print it in the zine, but I thought it would be a really difficult job to take, like, the quotes out as well as, like, his comments on the quotes out, and it would just be back and forth the whole time to read. So that's...
Why am I based?
That was my contemplation on the thing.
Did you want to talk about the zine right now, or you want to do the last... did you publish the zine yet?
Yeah,
you
ready for the zine? It's in the comments.
It was in the comments?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
And it's right here. So thanks.
Theme is circles this week.
Is it really circles?
Kind of circles, yeah. It was kind of circles. And
everything moves in circles,
everyone,
they say.
Look, this is... I'm going to pass it to you, and you can feel... And tell me what you think about this paper.
Is this newspaper?
Newsprint, as they call it in the biz.
He says, is it newspaper? Well, it is Stacker News. It is the news.
Stacker Newspaper.
Stacker Newspaper.
Why is it backwards?
Paper edition.
Oh, that's just like a test print.
Oh, okay. What are you doing with this dog? What is that? What is this? There's like a dog.
A what?
This one right here, that image?
Are you calling that a dog?
Is that a dog?
It's another dog, dude.
Everything is a dog.
Oh, it's a cat.
It's not a cat.
What is it?
A puppet, I believe.
No, this right here.
Oh, that's a cat.
Oh, okay.
It's a cat in a really weird posture.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's a cat.
Good job.
Oh, there's another cat.
I really like the newsprint.
I think the newsprint, too.
What's the difference, like, in as far as, like, economies of scale? I'm just kidding. Is it more expensive or...
I think it's probably comparable or cheaper.
Oh, cool.
Right?
It's got a creamy color, I would say.
The contrast is lower, so it's, like, easier to read.
Easier to read, easier to flip through.
Cool.
And the colors look brighter on it, I think.
It's not the web. Yeah, we got the web.
It just feels more official, I guess.
So
it feels quality.
Yeah, that's what we're going to be. I've had it for a long time. I just forgot to be using it.
Yeah. Cool stuff. Check out the zine this week.
Yeah, we had a lot of people buy the zine last week and like back packages. And we have to ship like 100 zines to Greece, and it's going to cost like $500.
Oh, where's the back page? There's no more back page? Or which is the back page? I guess it's in the front, right? Oh, right here.
You got it.
Oh, there it goes. So there's a free, there's an ad back here. Somebody got an ad. So for B Market 21.
Yep.
Boom. There you go.
There was two ads. Can you tell what the other one is?
Oh, is this what you were talking about the other day? I didn't know if you wanted me to say that, so I didn't bring it up.
It's okay.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell him. Tell him.
It's a heart.
What did Austin say?
I have nothing else. It's not from, I don't think it's Austin's heart to me. But it would be cute if it was.
Oh. So wait, so you're saying somebody bought a heart on the back of the zine?
Yep.
Because they love the zine?
Yep.
Oh, interesting. Well, we'll see if they drop another mystery note this week. Could be good. Could not be good. Or it could end. Stay tuned.
But yeah, B-Market 21 looks kind of cool.
It does. It's like a grocery. It's like an online grocery. Specialty grocer, maybe?
Yeah.
Would be the way to describe it. But yeah. I think it's based in Europe. I wonder if they ship to the United States. I didn't check. But things are priced in sats.
Yeah, that's cool. I like how you did that little thing there. That's cool. The little whirl.
Oh, and shout out to my niece, Cora, because I got her little drawings up in there.
Which one?
Those little stick people up at the top of the second page.
Oh, is that you and Austin?
Oh,
it's
that's
me
cool.
And her.
Oh.
Yeah,
it's
kids.
Me and Cora because we're best buddies.
Kids okay, why best. One of you is like sticky and the other one's boxy.
Right.
Which one is which?
I think Austin's wearing glasses on this one, it looks like. That looks like Jenna. That looks like Austin, right? I think Austin has a skateboard or something with him.
Yeah, he has a skateboard body.
I think so. Cool stuff. Awesome. This is amazing. Good job. I think this one feels really official.
I mean, we certainly spent more time talking about it than most of the other ones. So.
Well, I'm just so fascinated with all the different colors and everything. It's just, it really pops.
Yeah,
it's getting
fun.
Good. It's getting mature.
And then they can also buy, oh, wow, so you can purchase it right here. Cool. And they can also subscribe. There you go.
Yeah, if you're in Greece, you can bankrupt us by buying some of the backpack. If you're like an international, somewhere hard to get to,
yeah,
help us out.
Cool stuff. Let's jump into my post here real quick, if you don't mind. The first one I had was this one. What is the best tool for reoccurring Bitcoin Lightning payments for merchants? This was from an Anon. Did you see this?
Yes, I saw this. So, I don't think this is...
Yeah.
This still isn't much of a solved problem.
Yeah, so basically this Anon came through, and he says, I have a $1 billion company trying to accept Bitcoin Lightning subscriptions, but no one seems to offer it. WTF, LOL. This is not BS, and if you can find me a solution, I will literally show you the CEO, DM, and business. How is it 2026, and this isn't an easily solved problem with lots of information on how to set it up? Keon, what's the answer?
I don't think we have a great solution to this yet, and it's mostly because, you know, you're asking this question of a bunch of plebs on Stacker News. If you're operating in a $1 billion company, you should DM David Marcus, and he'll probably build you a state chain or a side chain or whatever he needs to make this happen. Or you should be, I don't know, on Nostr DMing Jack Dorsey. Or whatever, you know, like there hasn't been enough demand for this feature yet where someone is willing to spend their life developing it. Because we have seen a lot of like half solutions to it, and the response to it has been kind of tepid. People didn't really seem interested. Mutiny, when they came out with their wallet, they had a subscription in that wallet that I think pull from when you'd open it based on NWC, I think. There are almost solutions, but nothing a $1 billion business is gonna want. That's what these other $1 billion businesses like Spark, I think, are aiming to do. That's my answer.
That's a good answer. We had Al Chaz said, basically there's no real equivalent to credit card subscriptions because in Bitcoin, money can only be pushed by the owner, not pulled by a bank. He also did say NWC. And then Justin said Shock Wallet with the C-Link protocol. The business would run a Lightning Pub node, enterprise services through ShockNet. And then Darthcoin said you're living in a fiat world and you need to adapt. Somebody mentioned BTC Pay servers or BTC Pay subscriptions. Do you think that's a thing? But that still requires a node of sorts, I would imagine.
I would guess it's like an email, manual, automatic recurring, a credit balance. So you're basically buying a gift card.
Yeah.
And that's how they're doing it. It's custodial. Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely reach out to Moritz. I know he has subscriptions working, at least for some of the notes stuff, but I don't know how he's doing it on the back end.
It's because he's running the Node software, so he can kind of be like, Node, pay me. If your customer is running a wallet, and or like the service you're providing them, the wallet, it's pretty easy to solve. But if you're Netflix and you're not providing your customer with a wallet, you're providing them with a service, how do you pull a payment from their Bitcoin wallet?
Probably could be a feature. We're probably just not looking at it the right way. And I thought it was a great post to bring up. The next one I had was the best Claude code demo I've ever seen. This was at BBC. So this guy came through on Monday for Bitcoin Builders Club that we do here at the Capital Factory. And he was like blown away by what Eddie was presenting there. And honestly, like I think it was a great talk and everything. I need to post up the video, but I didn't necessarily think it was like the best thing ever. But I think for like a lot of people, kind of what we talked about earlier, are just slowly starting to understand what's at place here, you know, as far as like with what you can do and where it can go and stuff like that. I think he was kind of really interested in the Ralph Wiggum plugin that's kind of being talked about right now in the AI developer community. So that was something that he kind of demoed. But I don't know. I was shocked that this kind of got posted on his LinkedIn, and it just everybody started talking about it. I was just like, oh, wow. So anyways, thought I'd share it. What did you think about his demo?
I thought it was good.
Didn't feel mind-blowing, right?
I thought he did a great job of surveying these tools for a lightly technical audience. A lot of it I wasn't familiar with because I'm not doing much of this stuff yet. So I found it very helpful or interesting because he describes his process of discovering these tools as he's like lurking in a bunch of X lists and follows a bunch of YouTubers who are like and it seems like he's doing this too, where he's mostly just waiting to consume a new AI tool.
That's what I was saying earlier. Like, I feel like a lot of the younger generation are just like living in YouTube and like searching for. It's a very interesting. Like for me as an older man looking into this and like looking at and seeing it, it's just like very interesting to see that. It's like, would have never thought, but it's like that's where a lot of the best ideas are coming from, I guess. Twitter and YouTube. But fascinating stuff. But anyway, I just wanted to share that one because I thought that was worth mentioning. And then the other one, the last one I have, was this startup graveyard that somebody vibe coded. So this was interesting. So apparently you can go here, Keon, you can click on, you can search the graveyard of startups that never took off. They have some ones up here that you might recognize.
I saw some. I don't think this is, I bet the list itself was sort of vibed, because I saw some in here that I knew had like sort of semi exits. Like one of them was Cloudera, which I had a friend working at, and they went public, then they went back private again, and maybe that's considered like a failure. But that friend was paid very handsomely. I think his equity was worth quite a bit of money. Is that failed because they're not Coca-Cola, and they haven't built an empire? I don't know how they're defining. Do you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I just shared it because I thought it was fascinating. Like, you could literally search, like, whatever startup you're trying to do. Like, say, if you're trying to do, like, a social thing or something. And this would help you kind of weed out what you're building and watch. I was looking at it more like, this would be great to, like, look at what you're building, do some like, research on it, see some of the stuff that they failed to execute on, see if the difficulty rate, like, see if you can, like, go around it or, like, figure that out. I think more is just like a research. If you're building something, that's kind of how I was looking at it. But I didn't think about to check if it was actually true for any of this stuff, though. But I think it even goes into cause of death, the lawn. And
I think it's all slop, though.
Yeah.
So I think it's mostly. I think this is mostly Schadenfreude and like having a bit of fun kicking a dead horse.
Yeah, I thought it was cool.
No, it is cool. It is.
I think it was really cool.
It is a fun. project to have. I mean, I like these repositories of things, where and they're just like isolated to a single place, siloed.
And that was all. I think that's all the stories that we have here on Stacker.news. Oh yeah, we have Meta. So this one got shared. This guy Socratic created a Stacker News Review 2026 website. And I don't know if you saw this, Keon. See all the work that he did?
I did see it. I haven't gone through all of it yet. But I would like to.
I thought it was cool. He goes into, you can join. There's all these different features. That's cool that he just went and did this.
They do a lot
like
of,
for free.
They do a lot of they do a lot of quality guides like this. I need to go through and see if I can help and provide any feedback on it.
Also too, like maybe have this on your site, like link to it or something, like so people can like, because this almost feels like a what do you call that?
An FAQ.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool that he did that. Yeah, he even goes here. He goes into everything. Yeah, he said the community itself matters. You're surrounded by people generally interested in Bitcoin, privacy, technology, decentralization. Conversations tend to be substantive. Spam and low-effort posts don't get rewarded, so they fade away naturally. The platform attracts builders and thinkers rather than casual scrollers. What do you think about that?
I think that...
Tracks?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, we're not very big. Yeah. So,
cool stuff. Just wanted to share that. And then the other thing I wanted to... All right, the other one... Meta. The other one was the cross-posting. So Undisciplined posted this, I think it was Sunday, I think. Kind of got everybody talking about it. I read a few of his points, you know, but I'll defer to you to answer some of these questions that he had.
Oh, yeah, I had a comment here at the top where I answered... yeah, he just wants us to extend cross-posting to allow it to be retroactive. And then we still have this, like, evergreenness problem that a lot of people, that Undisciplined has been one of the biggest champions of, but quite a few people have really wanted this solved, where they write a really great post and they feel like it has, like, a shelf life and doesn't really resurface as regularly maybe as it should, given its quality and its like continued relevance. And so how do you solve that problem? Simple Stacker laid out a great and yet simple way to do that. Anyway, that's kind of what this is about, and we talk about it.
Yeah, I think I mean, I've talked to you about this before. I definitely think, like, each post is its own little piece of content that has... I don't even think it has a shelf life, because if as long as Stacker News exists, you'll always be able to make something on it. I think just being able to find it, like, if you're in a video store or something, like, being able to search through that like you would a YouTube or something, and then bring up that content or that piece of content that is there. I think that's really cool. What's cool about it. It's evergreen in that sense, where it could always be
found
and earning sats.
Yeah. The problem is kind of finding it and then kind of reigniting or helping other people find it. That's kind of what you're missing in a movie store like that.
To me, it almost feels like it should be its own. Yeah, I don't know. That's for you to figure out. but I understand what he's saying. But to me, I think there is a way to do it, but I don't know what that would look like. But I think
it's mostly by the recency of zaps. Like, if I find a post from 3 years ago that I think is really good and I zap the crap out of it, it maybe should appear alongside stuff on the front page.
Yeah, but wasn't there like a random button here at some point?
There was, and that was an attempt to kind of maybe resurface stuff, but it just didn't really fit. People didn't really use it. I think having more than three sorts is too many. I'd like to have one sort, but really, you end up at three is kind of should be enough though. Like,
yeah. So I thought that was good, and then the other one was. Let me go here. Where am I at? Gosh. I think I did really click it that much. Yeah, and then the last one we have for Meta was, are you ready for SNL tease? Boom! This is from Agoria. Agoria? Agora?
Agora.
Agora. Boom. There you go, Keon. Get your SNL tee.
Okay.
There you go. Boom. What do you think about that? Front page Bitcoin at stacker.news every week. How mad does that make you that that's the tagline that he is?
It doesn't make me mad.
Front page of Bitcoin, baby.
I mean,
woo! No, just kidding. Yeah, and then Wumble said, shared this one.
Is there anything else we need to cover?
It goes swag.
Yeah, I think we need to talk about getting some swag.
Did you like that guy in Silicon? Did you like him?
Oh, they did. There was a lot of great characters.
The guy that's, I think, Eric, the guy with the curly hair, he's like a comedian in actual life, right?
I think most of these
I think we need to build on the success of our
except for
I'm talking Pipe Piper mouse pads, puzzle cubes, fucking antenna balls. Come on, I'm talking him. 30 grand. It's like a
the guy all the way on the right.
He's more of an improv favorite guy, but still.
You don't call, you don't consider them comedians?
I don't know. Anyway, I listened to him on a podcast recently.
Uh-huh.
And he was describing being at a Bitcoin conference and appearing there like just for his buddy asked him to. And then like he's appearing on a panel, he's about to like say his name, and then the buddy like does a prank on him.
Mm.
And then he just like gets up and walks off the stage.
His buddy walked off the stage?
No, he did.
Because he didn't in response to the prank.
Yeah, he just didn't participate.
Oh man.
And he was paid to be there. And then both him and the podcast host are like, yeah, Natalie Brunell is so cool. That was another thing they did.
That's awesome. But yeah, get your swag.
Got to keep the girls in Bitcoin.
Swag.
Got to do whatever.
See if it loads. Is it going to load? It's going to load. Swag. Get your swag here. Boom. 35K cents.
Dude, get it. Does that include shipping?
I don't know.
That guy in
Greece. I was going to order one.
Try that. But I'm just
cool.
It's fun. I don't. I'm happy. I'm happy. Anyone wants the zine.
I think that's it. Yeah. The other one I want to get into was just the YouTube comments, getting a lot of interesting people. Keon, was that you that reposted that, or was that Wumble?
I posted what?
So this guy said you guys lack understanding and just talking. I was like, yeah. Where could the value be in this podcast? Yeah, that makes sense. I agree. And then somebody from the SNL account said, there is no value in this podcast. Unsubscribe immediately. You have been warned. Was that you?
That was me. Yeah, that was me.
Because it definitely wasn't me.
That was me.
Oh, okay, that was you. Okay.
Yeah.
So there you go. Keon's responding directly into the comments.
I've done that before. In some of the old, graphene ones.
Oh, you responded?
You guys completely got this wrong. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I think I replied like 5 times, I'm so sorry to people in that thread. Because they were upset.
I don't remember ever promising anything other than entertainment. So
I don't even promise entertainment.
I'm trying. I'm saying boredom. That's the only thing I've actually promised the Stackers was entertainment. Never said anything else about that. Anything else? Whether you get value in that entertainment, I don't know.
I'm just, you know, I promise that you're going to spend time, if you're watching this, you are spending time watching it. That's about as much.
And then Vake said, stay in your HTLC. Yeah. There you go.
Good one, Vake.
Then we had a fountain comment from Undisciplined. He said, try sweet potato fries in your burrito.
Oh.
Do they have those in California?
I believe it, yeah. That would be extra Californian.
You know, that actually doesn't sound too bad. I do like a good sweet potato fry.
Love a good sweet potato.
They're a little
fry.
More soggy, though.
Do you ever eat like a sweet potato? Just that's like a true. Like a baked sweet potato? Do you ever do that?
Yeah.
I like a mashed sweet potato.
Yeah. What would a soggy sweet potato fry add to a burrito? Because there wouldn't be the crunch of anything.
I don't know.
It's mostly because
sweetness.
It would add a bit of sweetness, a bit of filler, and then also the fat that accompanies anything fried.
So Pluckers. Uh-huh. Pluckers has their like sweet potato fries there, and they're pretty crunchy.
Inside a burrito?
I mean, you could put like a Pluckers sweet potato fry inside a burrito. I'm just surprised that people like fries and burritos, but I'd rather have a sweet potato fry than a fry.
I love a Frito burrito.
Ooh, From Sonic? Wow.
Probably Sonic made it at one point, but I just think, putting Fritos in a burrito, I think,
interesting.
Is cool.
Oh, that would be cool. They probably keep their texture a little bit better.
Yeah. It's like Frito chili pie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's all the stuff. We're going to jump into the top. Cowboys, baby. Key on your hat.
Oh, yeah.
Top Cowboys. Giddy on up, giddy on up, giddy on up. You got one person in hiding. Key on number two. Undisciplined number three. Blockchain Boog number four. Gray Ruby number five. Wait, wasn't Gray Ruby number four?
Yeah.
I don't think it works that way. I think all those people have kept their hat. So there's no way that Blockchain Boog could move.
All right. All right. Just making sure. Hey, I'm keeping it interesting.
No one can move ahead of Gray Ruby.
I'm trying to keep it interesting for the show, Kia. We look at the same.
Okay.
I figured by
I figured by
200 episodes by now, you'd be like, man, we just talk about the same chart every week.
Well, we can't lie about how it works to make it fun.
I'm not.
Right?
But I'm trying to make this like somewhat entertaining.
I think the way we make it entertaining is we accept the boredom of it. And we just kind of live in it.
So Undisciplined did mention one thing. We did used to cover the comments, the top comments of the week. But we stopped doing that because it got spicy. Remember that?
Yeah, that's how you describe what happened, just like how you describe how we went from five stories to three is Darth Coin. That's what Darth Coin told you to do. Just the backstory subject to
revision. You should make it up on the fly, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, you got Optimism, Scoresby. A lot of people hiding. What's going on?
Oh, yeah. Looks like they are hiding. Do you see that I gave Mr. Satoshi a Stacker News hat now in the default?
Where?
Image. Like, if you look at Mr.
Oh, here. So if we go to OT. Is that what you did?
Yeah, the default image now has.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. He's kind of wearing it sideways, too.
Yeah.
It's really the only way cool guy. It kind of made sense.
Dude, there's a lot of people that wear Stacker News hats now around town, huh?
No.
Yeah. I feel like I see more and more of them.
You see the
You're talking about Sam.
Yeah, basically. There's one.
No, there was some other person I saw the other day besides Sam. Who else was
I think
it?
Topher, you know, Topher and Austin both have
I'm trying to think. Yeah.
Topher was the first person to buy a Stacker News hat.
Wow.
In the world.
Topher was?
World's first.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Shout out.
Where's Jenna in here? I don't see her on here.
I recently lost my cowboy hat, so I'm...
Wow, so you're just not in there.
Nifty. She's actually on there.
She's up there.
Yeah, I guess you're not on here.
Oh,
wait, 77.
Good number. Great year.
Am I on here then? Oh, there's socks. No, I'm not on here. Wow. It's been a busy week.
Uncle Jam's up there.
It's been a busy week.
Too many meetings. Yeah. Do they give you a cowboy hat if you go to meetings? I don't think so.
Kia, what are you doing this weekend?
I don't know. I don't think I'm doing anything. I think I might put my drapes up, which I will look forward to.
Moss green linen.
Moss
drapes.
Green linen drapes.
Wait, over here?
Yes.
Oh, finally. Wow. That should be cool.
That's right. It should be very nice. I'm looking forward to it. So I got to do that.
You going to need a drill or no?
No, I don't need a drill. I just need to punch a small hole in the wall to put the hollow wall anchors.
That should be fun.
What else am I doing? I think that's it, really. I don't have anything. It's supposed to freeze here.
Oh, yeah. It's supposed to freeze. Janet, what are you doing this weekend besides freezing?
Yeah, hopefully not freezing, but, yeah, that may be happening outside. I already I created a few displaced bowls and jars of collected water in the event that
smart thinking
can't flush my toilet.
Are you gonna do what are you gonna do with your plants that are outside? Are you gonna like take care of them or
actually no, my plants outside, I'm just gonna let them fare.
Really? Is that a thing?
Whether they do or don't.
What's your advice for people that have plants outside, to bring them in or don't bring them in?
Well, yeah, you should bring them in, but I'm not bringing mine in because I know that they are not meant to withstand the winter, and it's like
you want
to
kill them.
I'm looking forward to going and buying new plants. I only have like two planters. So they're going to live or die. And that's what's going to happen.
Can I have ask you a dumb question?
Sure.
All right. It's really stupid. But I don't mind because it's for the show.
No one's watching.
Well, Why do people put bags on their plants whenever it freezes or rains?
Yeah,
or something?
So it keeps ice off of them.
Oh.
And then it'll also trap in heat around them.
But yeah, the plant breathe, though?
Yeah.
Okay. But it doesn't choke on its own CO2?
Nah.
It produces oxygen.
It's using oxygen from the ground.
In the plant pot.
No, like, yeah, under the dirt.
Yeah. Ah, yeah, interesting. I always wondered that.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's okay. And, I was also going to say I'm going to go to a birthday party.
Woo, party time in Texas.
Winter cool. Birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yep.
Did you buy them a present?
No, but I dressed like him. Can you tell? And this is a big hint right here.
Is it Sahil?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's Sahil's birthday.
Oh. Doxed. Triple doxed.
Oh, whoopsies.
Cool stuff. Well, happy birthday, Sahil, and we'll see you next time on Stacker News and Stacker News Live.
What are you doing this weekend?
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah. You didn't end the show. We were supposed to end it right there. What probably am I doing this weekend?
Yeah.
Probably freezing, yeah. Probably freezing.
Okay.
And then working here.
How do you leave yourself outside when it freezes?
No, I brought that plant. I brought lamp in, and Jenna's going to take care of it, so we'll see. Hopefully lamp can survive.
I'm going to repot.
I was worried. Lamp. I was worried about him.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah. I was worried about my plant, so I brought it in.
It's a real luxury.
Me and that plant have been through a lot. I love that plant.
Is that the one from 6th Street? It sounded like
did a crack. No, I've had it for like a really long time. But
not before 6th Street. Is that did like a lady buy you that one?
No.
Is there a backstory to that?
There's a whole backstory to that. Maybe I'll write a post about it this week.
Okay. We'll see. The story of Lamp.
The story of Lamp. Okay. Stackers, have a great weekend.
Yeah.